The Fan on Demand. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
One of these days, there's going to be like some big arena football story that we're going to have to talk about, and that promo is not going to make any sense. But until that day, it does make sense. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I am Ben Ennis, alongside Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle of Sportsnet Magazine. Good to have you gents with me. Lots to talk about today. Oh man, it was a big week in sports. A lot of negativity, and we will get to that a little bit, but a lot of fun stuff to talk about as well, and it's a Saturday, so we don't want to bum everybody out for 2 hours. So we will, though, get to the big stories in sports that everybody's talking about this week. But let's start with the Toronto Blue Jays, gents, who lose 1-0 yesterday to the Tampa Bay Rays because Nathan Carnes, who looked so horrible in that first inning against the Jays, couple of walks, hit batter, gets the double play, gets out of that inning, only allows two hits. And Jay Happ only allows two hits, but the Blue Jays lose 1-0. Now, 4 games back of that second wild card spot, they weren't going to run the table the rest of the season. I think we all understood that, but that kind of hurts. A guy who's making his first start ever in the American League, made a start or two with the Washington Nationals, a guy that has an ERA over 5 in the minor leagues this season, and you get two hit by him. That kind of stinks.
There's not a lot of margin for error with the Jays right now. When you have a start like that from Jay Happ and you have the ability to win a ball game where you allow just one run, that's kind of something that you have to capitalize, especially now more so than ever. When you got in a guy who in the first inning looks shaky as hell, you know, a couple walks, hit batter. I mean, you got men on base. You can't find the strike zone. They had him up to 24, 25 pitches in the first inning. You got to jump all over a guy like that for the Jays to let him settle in. And, you know, you just saw some weird stuff like Johnny Navarro strike out 3 times. How often are you going to see that? You know, it's just a weird night at the plate for a lot of hitters.
It seems a very Jays way to go about losing a bit of momentum. At 1-0, 2 errors. It's the city's starting to really get behind the idea that, okay, once again, maybe they can make it, and then they go and frustrate everyone with this.
It is, you know, Sid Sixero had an interesting tweet yesterday, and it's hard to argue that this is, I mean, this is meaningful baseball. They're 4 games back. How meaningful? Okay, it's up to you to decide, but for a team that's playing meaningful baseball, does it feel meaningful when there's 19,000 people in the stands, you get two hit, you lose 1-0, and you're 4 games back? I know it is technically meaningful, and they've got to still go on an incredible run at the end of the season. How meaningful is this baseball game? I mean, are we on the very precipice of it being not so meaningful, or am I getting hung up in semantics here a little bit as well?
We're getting there. I mean, if they lose 2-0-3 to the Rays here and then go into New York and fall on their faces, I mean, that's the end of all meaning right there. And then you're mailing it in, right? I mean, I think that the crowd last night was light. But I mean, what can you expect from fans, really? It was a crappy night out. You know, it wasn't a nice night to go and deal with the traffic and walk to the ballpark.
Right.
And
you don't even live in the burbs. I do. I know how lousy it is to get into that ballpark because I went that final game of the Cubs series. It was not fun driving across the Gardner. So, yeah, I understand
But I was there on Tuesday night as well when there was, I don't know, 14,000 maybe for the Cubbies, and that was a good crowd. When you look at that was the night that Jose Bautista hit the double off the wall, clear the bases. 3-2 to Bautista. Everybody in the park, it wasn't a lot of people, but everybody who was there was up and cheering.
Well, and it's not just the Blue Jays that are having trouble drawing this time of year. The Indians, who had the identical record, still do as the Blue Jays, had their lowest total ever at Progressive Field, 9,000 the other day. Yeah. And that's a team that's exactly as far back as the Blue Jays are of a playoff spot.
I think fans get a bit of fatigue at this point of the year, you know, where we're getting into 140-game territory here. Like, this has been going on since April, right? Like, this has been going on since the end of the last time that it was cold, and now it's getting cold again. So, you know, it's been a long time, and fans just kind of get fatigued with it. You know, you want something else.
But if you want this to be meaningful baseball, the Jays have to do really well against Tampa because they've got the Orioles for 6 games. You need to get the good part of the meaning in now, because the Orioles can destroy you. I mean, the Orioles are falling apart physically, which has given them a bit of hope, but you can't afford to give anything away to Tampa.
And the Orioles are putting the hurt on the Yankees, sweeping a doubleheader yesterday. The O's will have clinched the division seemingly in a matter of moments.
Magic number is 5, I believe.
Yeah. With a couple weeks still to go in the season.
So they might do it when the Jays are there.
Well, that could be, that's a possibility, but another possibility, well, either way, that last series of the season is going to be absolutely meaningless for the Orioles, which is good for the Blue Jays, you would think, unless you got a bunch of young kids who are trying to prove themselves. I mean, it could work both ways, I suppose, but
especially if them playing on turf. I mean, Buck Showalter's not running his starters out for 3 straight games on turf. There's no shot.
Yeah, well, I think if you're a Blue Jay fan, all you're looking for is for that final 7-game stretch, that homestand, 4 against the Mariners and 3 against the Orioles. If you can go into that stretch 2 games-ish back of that second wildcard spot, it's not an ideal situation, but, I mean, that would be exciting. That's true excitement, and I think they would pack Rogers Center for those 7 games. I mean, you'd get the excitement of the Leafs about to crank up their season. Be a real sports buzz in this city, and I'd be filling in for Mike Wilner for the final 3 games of that Mariners series, so I'd be pumped up as well. That'd be fun.
You're either going to have a great time or a really, really bad time.
Yeah, I'm going to have to be fending off those Jays talk callers with a stick. We'll see. But that would be truly meaningful baseball. Back to yesterday, though, and that 1-0 loss. Jay Happ, has he been underrated, properly rated? The ERA is now at 4.28. He went 7 innings, as mentioned, just gave up the 2 hits, 1 earned run, 7 strikeouts, just 1 walk as well. The guy uses the fastball a lot. He's a guy that throws from the left side of the rubber and throws 95-ish, uses a lot of fastballs. Now, granted, this isn't a super offensive juggernaut in the Tampa Bay Rays, but he's a guy that if you saw him in spring training, you thought, oh, he's a non-factor for this Blue Jays team. He's an absolute travesty. He's going to, you know, 120 pitches in 4 innings like he always does. This has been kind of a breakout year for him.
He was playing his way off the roster at the end of spring training, you remember.
Yep, he went on the DL.
Yeah, hurt his back. And it was kind of a mysterious back injury, too. It's kind of one of those injuries where you're like, all right, let's just kind of get this guy out of the spotlight for a little bit. You know,
make up an injury, maybe.
So, but he's been Jay Happ, 4.28 ERA, 138 innings pitched. I mean, he's been what he's going to be. He's 31 years old, right? I mean, he is what he's going to be. He's not going to have a dramatic turnaround of his career or anything at this point. I mean, he's a guy who uses the fastball a lot, throws contact a lot. Sometimes he gets hurt, like he did against Ryan Hannigan when he grew the first pitch, get me over fastball. And
yeah,
Hannigan
I didn't
takes
even
it
think
out.
That was that lousy a pitch. I mean, yeah, right. Okay, it was a first pitch fastball. It just seemed like he ambushed him a little bit. You figure you got to score at least 1 run to win anyways, so it's hard to blame Jay Happ at all.
You get surprised more guys don't ambush him, though, because he can be a bit predictable. But I think DeAndre Navarro just working with his pitching staff has really helped a lot of guys. When you notice how many guys when they're talking to us will say like, oh, you know, DeAndre's been great, the catcher's been great, he calls a great game, and how seldom you heard that in the past 2 seasons. I mean, I think that's really helped guys like Jay Happ. You know, that's helped a guy like Marcus Stroman coming in. You know, I mean, Mark Burley, you know, it's not that much of a coincidence he's having such a great career year this late in his career, and he just so happens to have gotten, you know, matched up with an expert catcher.
Yeah, and he's actually shook him off like twice this season.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So where does Jay Happ factor in next season with this rotation then, guys? Because I think Marcus Stroman's obviously a given. He's going to be in the rotation. He's been in it pretty much the whole year after Brandon Morrow went down and Dustin McGowan was lifted from the rotation. So he's in. R.A. Dickey, Mark Burley are guys that, I don't know, unless you can move them, are going to be in the rotation. So there's 4/5 of your rotation. Plus you want to get Sanchez in there. Who am I forgetting? You got Daniel Norris maybe knocking on the door as well. Drew Hutchison, obviously. So, I mean, that's 7 starters, I think I mentioned. So what is the play for this team next season in the starting rotation?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to see Norris. I think he's going to start at AAA. I mean, I'd be pretty sure of that. Jay Happ, I don't know. We were talking, you know, he's got that $6.7 million option. $200,000 buyouts. It's really $6.5 million. For what he's given you, the value he's given you,
yeah,
I think you pick that up easily for 2 reasons. I mean, you bring him in as competition for Aaron Sanchez, for Marcus Stroman. I mean, I don't think that you want those guys, as young as they are, going in thinking they have assured spots. Like, Stroman's probably earned it this year. Sanchez for next year. I think you want to give him a bit of competition and push him in spring training so he doesn't come in as a kid in his early 20s just thinking he's assured of a spot. I think you want him to actually earn it in spring training. And then you've got J-Hap, where if somebody gets hurt in spring training, J-Hap can fill in. If not, you can trade him because there will be teams looking for J-Haps that are affordable after spring training at $6.7 million. You can use him that way. I think he's just a valuable asset to keep around. I don't see why you would get rid of somebody who's that affordable and gives you that much value just because you say, oh, well, we've got these kids, so we're fine. That's just a stupid approach.
Jamie, what is the excitement level? What's going to be the opinion of Blue Jays fans headed into next season if this team does fall short of a playoff spot? Maybe even by it. I guess there's a couple of different options here. One is they go on an incredible run and do make that one game playoff and whatever. That's gravy at that point. Even if you're just in that game, I think Blue Jays fans think of this season as a huge, huge win. Other option is you fall just short. It was just too much ground to make up. And yes, you are playing meaningful games in that final homestand. You're a couple games back and you just fall short of playing in that one game playoff. And the other option is they fall on their face again here in September, and you end up the track 6-7 games back by the end of the season going into next year, because it's easy to forget as well. This team was picked to finish dead last in the American League East heading into this season by a lot of people. What is the mindset? Because there was so much, you know, it was just a downtrodden fan base headed into this year. What is the fan base? What is the emotion level like of this fan base headed into next year, depending on those scenarios?
It's got to be hard to tell because it's been such a roller coaster ride this year. You get May where they're unstoppable. You get August where they can't even get started.
Yeah.
And then now they're back in it. And I think at this point, fans just don't know what to think. You probably got to be a bit numb. So going into next year, it's probably just, I would imagine the safest answer to this is just, I don't know. Like the fans will just see how this plays out. I'm not going to get too excited. We've been burned by that before. And really sick of being bummed out by how things look. So I'm just going to go in with my eyes closed, and we'll figure this out as we go along.
That doesn't sound very Torontonian, does it?
No, that's the complete opposite of how Toronto approaches sports.
Yeah, see, to me, the Torontonian approach would be, oh, this team's going to stink next year. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to suck again. This team stinks. We stink. The trapdoor is going to fall open, and this team's going to be garbage next year. I mean, that seems to me, that would be the Toronto approach.
Don't people learn? I mean, 2 years ago, all right, the Jays are going to win the World Series, what people said before the season, and they fell flat on their face. This year, everyone said, okay, the Jays are going to be terrible. They're going to be trash. They're 6 games over .500 right now. They're not. They're much better than many, many other teams in professional baseball. So, like, haven't you learned? Like, people have already forgotten already about, like, the dire projections for this team coming into the season. And obviously, it hasn't gone the way fans would like it to, but I mean, fans are just kind of playoffs or they're awful. I mean, they can miss the playoffs by half a game and people would say this is a terrible team. But I you know, the preseason projections, I mean, it's folly.
I think Arden just doesn't understand how fans think in general, not even Toronto fans. You forget what happened before. When a guy makes a bad play, he's the worst player in the world.
That's true.
And when he makes a good one, he's your hero. That's how it works. Nothing. Yeah. There's no history. There's no context to things.
Can you imagine if your job was like that? Screw up one thing, you're fired, you're done.
One little typo?
Yeah,
it's over. Yeah, you have to watch yourself a little bit. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Arden Zwelling, Jamie Doyle, alongside myself, Ben Ennis. It's where the word fan comes from, right? Fandom.
Fanatic, perhaps?
Fanatic, yeah. People are fanatics. And it would make sense if people overreact to a season like this. But so far, Blue Jays still hanging in there. Another interesting aspect to this team and how it's going to be constructed next season is the outfield and Melky Cabrera, specifically if they're able to bring him back in left field. And if they're not, I mean, that's a huge hole to fill in. I'm among those that believe that a Kevin Pillar, Anthony Ghost platoon in center field is not the worst thing in the world, like that you could do worse. And certainly the defense and the speed and all that make up for some of their offensive deficiencies. But if you have to play both of those guys every day against everybody, now I know you do have John Mayberry Jr. as well factoring in to some degree, but he's a platoon player as well. I mean, you could be looking at a huge hole because I think we all agree that Colby Rasmus isn't coming back. But if you have to play Kevin Pillar and Anthony Ghost every day, that's a huge, huge problem for this team.
Yeah, I mean, they're waiting for Dalton Pompey is what they're doing. And Dalton Pompey's 21. And he's right up here now, but he's going to start at Buffalo next year. And this is a guy who started the year in Dunedin.
Yeah.
So you're not going to just throw him into the fire next year.
How good can he be as well?
I mean, he could be really good. I talked to him for a long time yesterday. He's very, very...
And he said, I could be really good.
he said, Arden, don't worry. I got this, bro. So he's a very confident kid. He's very mature for a 21. You wouldn't know he's 21 years old. Like, you wouldn't know he's a kid at all. Like, he's a very, very mature guy. And just when you look at the steps that he's taken this year, just to go from starting your year at Dunedin, starting your year in single A to playing in the majors is a crazy thing to do. Like, that doesn't happen very often. To be able to hit at every level as you come up and not kind of hit a rough patch is crazy. So maybe that means a rough patch is coming. Who knows? But I think he's a above average prospect, but he's not going to be ready for next year. I think they're hoping that something happens with John Mayberry Jr., which is kind of it was a sneaky good pickup in a way. Alex snuck in there, got him from Philly. You know, he's a guy who has been good throughout his career, can't really hit righties, but, you know, he's an athletic guy. He's, you know, a big-bodied guy. He can run a bit. He can, you know, he's not going to play center, but you're fine with him in a corner outfield spot. I think ideally you want Ghost Pillar platooning in center and Melky in left, but, I mean, Melky's going to take the money wherever the money is, and it might not be in Toronto.
Yeah. Do you believe it's true? I mean, if everything's equal and he's offered the same money in Toronto as he is somewhere else, whether that's the Yankees, I don't know if they want to bring him back or wherever. I mean, the free agent list of outfielders is pretty weak, pretty meager this year. There's going to be somebody that's going to offer him some big time bucks. If the money's equal, I mean, he said that he wants to come back to Toronto, although what else is he going to say?
Yeah.
Do you think if all is equal, he would be apt to return to Toronto?
I do. I think that if the Jays were able to match whatever offers are out there, I mean, Melky's, like, his boys are on the team, right? Like, all his Dominican buddies are on this team. He likes playing here. It's kind of, you know, out of the spotlight for a guy who's had some pretty bad press in his career. You know, he likes the coaching staff. He likes Gibby. Gibby's a guy he knows from his KC days, right? Like, these guys go back. And, you know, he's tight with Bautista and with Reyes and all those dudes. So I think he would come back if the money was there. I'm just not confident that the Jays are going to be able to match what another team's going to be able to give him. Because he's, right now, you're looking at him being the top outfield option on the free agent market.
Yep.
And there's always teams in need of a guy like Melky Cabrera.
Yeah, no question. Switch hitter and a guy who's got a little bit of pop. He started the season with a bunch of home runs, kind of tailed off power-wise at the end of the year, but yeah, finished his season hitting over 300. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, along with Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle. The bullpen, if you can point to one thing that's been consistently inconsistent, love that expression, this season, it's been the bullpen and Casey Jansen, another guy that I think we all expect to depart the Blue Jays in the offseason as a free agent, go somewhere, and I don't know if he's necessarily going to be a closer somewhere else. I think he's kind of shown that maybe not the ideal closing option, although he's had, you know, moments where, and even before the All-Star break, when he went to that stupid resort and got food poisoning, that was maybe the biggest mistake of his season. But I think we all agree he won't be a Blue Jay. You know who's an interesting guy? And man...
Does his name rhyme with Schmoro?
Yes. He's a guy that has tempted so many teams with his velocity, right? I mean, the Seattle Mariners didn't know what to do with him. They started him in the bullpen because of the live arm, and he was a closer, and he couldn't hit the zone, and he was a starter, and he couldn't hit the zone, and he had a good season with the Blue Jays as a starter. But we've also seen moments where he can't hit the zone. Mm-hmm. But when you throw 100, I mean, that's closer stuff. Are you willing to take a $10 million risk on a guy who throws 100? Because you have no idea, first of all, if he can stay healthy. Secondly, if he can just throw strikes. That's really all you got to do when you throw 100. Well, that and maybe have a couple other pitches. But if you throw strikes and you throw 100, you're going to, I mean, you're already starting ahead of the game. I wonder, that's, can you, when you're working around a budget and you're trying to fit in Melky Cabrera and you look at $10 million, it's $10 million for a guy. If he's just a middle reliever, that's not worth it. But if he's a top tier closer, it might be. Are the Blue Jays willing to accept that?
What makes it difficult is the stuff, right? Is the fact that he's throwing 100. So you don't want to let that go somewhere else and for him to find something somewhere else and become what people, you know, what people think he could be.
Right.
Like, you don't want to see him doing that for the Kansas City Royals.
Well, it's one thing to sign Dustin McGowan to a $1 million deal.
Yeah.
Because you're afraid of that happening, and it's another for $10 million.
Yeah. Well, there's no shot that option gets picked up.
Really?
I don't think there's any chance they $10 million, especially when you're working on a budget and you've already got two pitchers in your rotation making big money in Dickey and Burley. I don't think that you have the ability to do that, especially because like he's not assured a rotation spot next year. So you're not going to pay $10 million for a reliever. You're not talking Papelbon here.
But now all of a sudden you have depth in your rotation. Are you sure that he comes back if they do try and figure something out with him and decline the option, but they try and work something out, yeah, 1 or 2 year deal, maybe with some incentives, although that's not how Alex generally does it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that he comes back to a bullpen role where this team will need some help in the offseason?
He wants to start. That's what Brandon Morrow wants to do.
Sure, everyone wants to start. Casey Jansen wanted to start, right?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And Brett Cecil wanted to start. I mean, you know, guys have gone on, you know, who have failed as starters have gone on to great bullpen careers. But, I mean, Brandon Morrow believes he can start, and he's done. He's, you know, he had that 17 strikeout game. Like, that wasn't that long ago. I mean, this is a guy who's had very, very good results.
You can almost point to that game to, like, the moment where it kind of went downhill for him, threw like 130 pitches in that start.
Right.
He hasn't been the same since, really. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he gets denied. Like, I think they don't pick up that option. And so then he goes and sees what's out there on the free agent market. Maybe you can find a Josh Johnson, like, kind of buffer contract where they say, okay, we'll give you a year at, you know, $6 or $7 million, incentives laden. Right. So you get a year at that. And if you pitch 160 innings, the second year vests, right? Or if you pitch 180 innings, the second year vests, right? And you get a kind of a contract like that, like a prove yourself, show me starters contract. If you can't get that, I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't want to come back to this team to pitch out of the bullpen and be possibly the closer if Casey Jansen leaves. I mean, that's your closer right there if Casey Jansen leaves. But I think that there's got to be a team out there that'll take a shot on him. They'll take a $6 million flyer on him.
There are, and you know what? In the minor leagues, it's littered with guys who throw 100 who couldn't figure it out with the control. And not to say that Brandon Morrow is that guy, but he's had moments where he can't find the zone. Daniel Bard was a guy with the Red Sox who they finally figured out how to get him to throw strikes and then put him in the rotation, and then he completely fell off the map. Mm-hmm. And I think they released him actually recently, but yeah. So you hope that's not the situation with Brandon Morrow. One more thing, we're talking about the Blue Jays before we take a break, and we'll come back to talk a little NFL. Third base is a question, and it seems like the Blue Jays are really giving Danny Valencia a good run here. Now, in a small sample size, he's been good against righties, but the career numbers suggest, and you're talking about almost 1,000 plate appearances against righties, whereas on base is just about 260 against them, which is horrible. But it seems like the Blue Jays are pretty intent on giving him a good look. And they wouldn't be the first team to say, you know, I think he's figured something out. We've taught him how to hit righties. We've fixed him. He's fine. He's going to be our everyday third baseman. You like the power. What's not to like it? But is there a possibility that they start next season with Danny Valencia as their everyday third baseman and Brett Laurie as their everyday second baseman?
I think that's the situation you're looking at right now, for sure. I mean, so right now, those are the pieces that they have. They have Danny Valencia in camp, so you might as well see what you got from him, right? So you might as well run him out every day and see if he can do it. I mean, he played every day for the Twins a few years back. It was
not very well.
It was atrocious, really bad. I think they're just trying to see, like, you know, look, hey, Danny, you got September. Show us what you got. Make us keep you around for next year. Make us give you a job next year. And that's kind of what he's doing right now. I mean, you know, that Adam Lind was in the same situation last year where they said, Lind, you got September to show us what you got. We might not be picking up your option. And then he had that great September. And they kept them.
This is why this show needs to be on television. We need to be in the other studio on television because Arden's chair just collapsed on him. And he fell down about 3 feet while he was in the middle
maintained
of that.
Maintained my
Adam,
composure, though.
Adam Lind diatribe.
What a professional.
Yeah. Maintained my composure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what goes on in this offseason.
It's a similar situation on the free agent market where there just aren't a lot of great kind of corner infield or even middle infield. It's a weak free agent market across the board, really, outside of pitching. Outside of, you know, your Lesters and your Shields. I mean, there's just, looking at it right now, Emilio Bonifacio, been there, done that, right? You know, like Kelly Johnson, been there, done that. Chase Headley has had a really bad year. He's been all right since going to New York, but I mean, I don't know if you're going to give him the money that he might be demanding. It's not, you don't want to be out looking for free agents to fill holes this winter unless you're looking for pitching, I don't think. I don't think you want to be looking for position player free agents this winter because you're going to overpay and you're going to get yourself into a bad situation.
Yeah, certainly seems like the Blue Jays would just like to at least pick up one guy that's a free agent. That's Melky Cabrera, but you wonder why it hasn't been taken care of already if that was...
Well, Melky wants to test it, right? He wants to see what's out there.
Yes, I think he's going to like what he finds. When we come back, lots going on the NFL docket. I mean, there's games to talk about, but there's also stuff outside of the game and plenty of it. We will talk about that a little bit, but we'll also talk about what's gone on first couple of weeks of actual games in the NFL season, although we're just one game into week two. Lots to talk about in that regard. We'll also get to the Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice scenario. That's coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Ennis, along with Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Here's Dan Robson.
Well, LeBron James went on national television to announce that he was leaving the Cleveland Cavaliers for the glitz and glamour of Miami Beach. The decision ripped the hearts out of Cavs fans, and it turned James into the NBA's number one villain. But four finals appearances and two championships later, James is returning to Northeast Ohio. In Cleveland, he hopes to bring a hard luck sports town its first championship in 50 years. And while cynics say the return is about polishing a tarnished legacy, the fans who torched his jersey once again hail him as a hero.
Time heals all wounds. And, you know, I've changed a lot in 4 years. He's changed a lot in 4 years. Dan Gilbert's changed a lot in 4 years. You know, the world's changed. Cleveland's changed. And it just, now that we've all apologized, we're all ready to move on.
But back in Akron, Ohio, where LeBron James grew from a boy with few options into an international superstar, we search for the real reason King James is heading home. Along that path, we find the first stable home he knew and the family that took him in. We find a coach who taught him the game and the court where he learned to dream. We discover a kid from Northeast Ohio who never really left at all.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet Magazine, available on newsstands now and for your tablet and mobile phone on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand. Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis along with Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle. Coming up today on Sportsnet, you got Blue Jays naturally. 12:30 pregame as they continue their series against the Tampa Bay Rays on Sportsnet Ontario. Then later today, the playoff madness, chaos continues. 7 o'clock, the Indians in Detroit to play the Tigers. Continue that series, a huge one between those AL Central rivals. NFL season well underway into week two here. We are one game into week two. Lots going on the field, and we will get to the off-the-field stuff in just a second as well. But on the field in week one, couple of very entertaining close finishes, overtime games, Buffalo Bills going to overtime and actually winning a game in Chicago against the Bears, knocking a lot of people out of their eliminator pools. Not me, because I took the Eagles, although I was sweating a little bit when they were down 17-0 to the Jacksonville Jaguars, but they are still scoring on Jacksonville and beat them 34-17. What is, I guess I'll leave it generally, guys, what is your big takeaway from week one of the NFL season?
It's so early, you can't really, I mean, we've seen crazier things happen in the NFL. It's so hard to get a gauge, unless you're like really, really into it, to get like a gauge of like what's going to happen. I mean, because, you know, injuries, suspensions, like a lot of things happen that, you know, are the Minnesota Vikings what they are now without Adrian Peterson? I mean, like a lot of things have to play out. So it's so hard to get a gauge of like where things are coming out. I mean, I just want to see entertaining football is what I like to see. And those 1 o'clock games, like
you mentioned, were great.
It was maybe one of the best slates of 1 o'clock games. I mean, it just seems that way because we haven't had regular season football for so long, but it seemed like those games were really entertaining, really tight, back and forth. You didn't know what was going to happen. A lot of overtime stuff. I mean, I don't really enjoy watching the Buffalo Bills play football, and I watched that game because it was really entertaining.
Yeah, and it goes to show you that the preseason, like in many other sports, means absolutely nothing. What about you, Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, the preseason, how much can it mean when they don't hit each other?
Right.
You know, they're playing flag football. It becomes pretty meaningless. I like seeing upsets. I'm not a fan of any particular NFL team, but I did like seeing Brady get upset by the Dolphins.
The
Dolphins don't win football games. That's not their job.
I forgot about that.
How weird is it to look at the AFC East standings and see the Patriots alone in last place in that division?
Yeah. And I thought bringing with Gronk back in, he's supposed to lift the team, and he does. Like, his stats show that he lifts everyone around him, except for Julian Edelman, because he robs targets off of him, but apparently not enough. I mean, Edelman's down. Gronk had a good game, but they still lost.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think the Seahawks, they started the season on that Thursday nighter with the big 36-16 win over the Packers. It'll be interesting to see if they're somehow better than that team that won a Super Bowl a season ago. I think the Eagles, they seem to have that exciting offense again. Again, it's hard to judge because they were against the Jaguars, but I think the Jaguars will be a little bit improved, and how can they not be from last season? They showed a little bit at the end of last season as well. Cowboys seem like legitimately horrible. They were 8-8 a year ago with a defense that was historically bad by the numbers, and that defense, I mean, 28-17 doesn't tell the story of how badly the 49ers outplayed them in that game in Dallas. Is the NFL better when the Cowboys are good? Because it seems like the Cowboys are lousy.
I like Tony Romo. I'm out there saying that right now.
Yeah?
I like Tony Romo. And I like him because everyone hates him.
He's your quarterback, man.
I like him because everyone just craps on him all day. And that's why I'm into, because I just like those underdog guys. And I think if you look at his career numbers, I mean, he's had a fantastic, phenomenal career.
Last year, he was great too. Yeah. People forget about that. That team had no business being 8-8 last year.
He's a great fantasy football quarterback too. He racks up numbers for you.
But he's like that Shakespearean tragedy guy, right? Like at the crucial moment, he will drive the stake through your heart.
That's what's so interesting about him. That's why he's so much fun to watch. Because
he loves the drama.
Yeah, I do. Because he'll play just great football for like three quarters, and then the fourth throw like 15 interceptions. Like it's really, really fun to watch. And if you look at his numbers, like, he's right up there with some of the best quarterbacks of this generation. He's been better than like 98% of quarterbacks that have played in the NFL in the last few years.
It's the Cowboys are, there are comparisons to be made between them and the New York Yankees, right? They are kind of the Yankees of football, although recently they've not been as good as the Yankees have been in Major League Baseball. And it's a different sport, right? With the salary cap, you can't just outspend everybody and get yourself into the playoffs year after year. But they're the team that everybody focuses on that either loves to hate or loves. There's a ton of Cowboys fans, but there's a lot of schadenfreude from a lot of people around football circles that enjoy watching them fall flat on their face. Is it better, though? I think if you really got down to the nitty-gritty of it, I think baseball is probably better when the Yankees are good, right? Like, not dominant, maybe, or maybe that there's an argument to be made that baseball is actually better when they are in their dynasty mode. But is the NFL better when the Cowboys are better? Or is it just so different because there's so much up and down that it doesn't really matter? You don't need that marquee franchise to be great.
I don't think you need it. And I think it's more fun to see the Cowboys be bad than it is to see them be good. Because unless you're in Texas, and I know that they have tons of fans outside of Texas, but it just seems like they have this swagger still that they just can't justify. But they're just like a guy who's still dressing like it's 1995 and just thinking he's awesome. And you're just like, dude, you look weird.
They are definitely not awesome.
No.
There's no question about it. But apparently that stadium is awesome. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, 10:44 Saturday morning on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, along with Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle. Guys, so you couldn't go through a two-hour show and talking about the week that was and the week to come and everything that sports fans are talking about and not talk about some of the stuff that's happened off the field in the NFL. Ray Rice, the two-game suspension, well, that didn't last very long after people actually saw what took place inside that elevator. He was first cut by the Baltimore Ravens, then suspended indefinitely by Roger Goodell. And that's a whole conversation that I think is interesting as well, the future of Roger Goodell and what happens to him. I guess a lot still has to be found out as to whether he's actually telling us lies, that he never saw that video, or whether he truly didn't and is just negligent. But there's also this aspect to it that is, you know, there's a lot of people that are turned off, and rightly so, by obviously some disgusting acts, and Adrian Peterson just breaking yesterday as well, what's gone on with him and the child abuse story. But it's people have a difficult time making the separation between the sport and the ethical issues with watching the sport that might be, you know, blatantly or willingly blind to some of the problems that some of the players are having. Now, I don't have that problem because I watch sports for the sport, and I understand that there's scumbags in every sport because there's scumbags in every walk of life. You walk down the street and there's scumbags, probably some scumbags in this room. No, obviously not to that degree. But yes, there are scumbags in sports. Ty Cobb is in the Hall of Fame. Would I want to go have a beer with Ty Cobb? Absolutely not. But I watch sports for sports. And I'm kind of in the camp that Charles Barkley said, I'm not a role model. Now, this is some pretty heinous stuff. I mean, this is the worst of the worst when you're talking about spousal abuse, abuse against women, abuse against children. But is there justification in people saying, you know what, enough. I'm done with watching the NFL because it's so disgusting. What's gone on in this league with some of the players is just too much. I can't handle it anymore.
It's hard to watch on a Sunday with that just like hovering knowledge of like what has happened and like what some of the people that you're watching and cheering for and that are being idolized and people, you know, all the people that showed up in Ray Rice jerseys on Thursday night and all the people who still worship these guys and like what has happened. I get very conflicted about it. I find it very hard to watch it without that knowledge of what's happened. I mean, I think, and just when you look at what an institution in football is in America, especially, and what it means to that country, I mean, it's a massive, massive national.
Were you watching it before with baby eyes though? Did you just think everybody was a saint that was on the football field?
I think when I was a kid, I did. Yeah, I think when I was younger, I did, for sure.
But before this Ray Rice thing, so this has changed your opinion of watching football?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I felt this way for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, I've been jaded and messed up for a while. But, I don't know. I think now that, but it's all, you know, in a way, it's like these are discussions that need to happen. We need to talk about the role of, you know, domestic violence. We need to talk about the prevalence of racism when you look at, you know, a team name like the Washington Redskins, you know. We need to talk about the barriers that gay athletes face in sport when you look at Michael Sam, right? And these are all things that have brought these issues to the forefront. So in a sense, it's good that we're having these discussions, but I get conflicted when I feel like, oh, but it's also terrible that what happened to Jhené Rice. You know, I think it's terrible. You know, the Adrian Peterson stuff that came out yesterday is sickening. So, I mean, it's so conflicting. It's so hard to watch the game and even to just see the toll that is going on neurologically to these players when you have reports coming out saying that like 30% of them are going to end up having dementia or Alzheimer's. I mean, there's so many issues just even inherent in this sport beyond what, you know, how the athletes behave off the field. I don't know how people watch it without that kind of hovering knowledge in their head and without that kind of, in, you know, inflecting how they consume the sport.
Well, I think like you're a very intelligent, like thinking person, and you approach things not as a fan, and like fan support can just be really baffling because people, like you see the you mentioned like the fans that show up in Ray Rice jerseys, and it's almost surreal. I don't know. I find it really hard to get past. I'm a fan, like a passionate fan of teams, but I'm able to make the separation between what they do on the field and me cheering for them as an athlete and the actual, I don't care what kind of people they are, mm-hmm. barring being, you know, monsters. But like, there is like a certain suspension of disbelief that you have as a fan that like, mm-hmm. I'm cheering for this guy because he's wearing the same shirt that I am. And that makes him better as an athlete and by extension, somehow better as a person. And I just like him more. I know that that's not actually a real thing, but for 90 minutes of a soccer game or four quarters of a football game, like you're willing to just get through that. But then at some point, and you're also, actually, there's a suspension of, like, your kind of morality. Like, this is football. Like, these guys are going out hitting people as hard as they can, which is fine, and that's what you're cheering for, and that's what you want. But you obviously can't do that. You can't cheer for someone who's just running around town hitting people as hard as they can. So you have to set certain things aside. But at some point, things leave that realm of like sports fandom and they become real life, and you have to be able to like take off your fan hat and be an adult and be like, this is real world stuff. I'm going to treat this as the adult that I am. And you know, this isn't like fan athlete. This is one human being did something. I'm going to be a human being and just kind of step away from this.
But I think especially when you're talking about a game like football, that's such a part of the American identity and such a part of their nationalism. And such, it's a game that you get your kids involved in to learn lessons. You know what I mean? To learn life skills and teamwork and leadership. I mean, all these things that people will extol for why they get their children into it, when inherent in the game is violence, and when clearly like a significant proportion of those who play it professionally are having these really, you know, are committing these horrors away from the field and occasionally on it as well. I mean, I don't know how you satisfy both ends of that.
Yeah, it's certainly, I think, a sport that is inherently going to attract people that are a little bit on the crazy end of the sliding mental scale, right? You kind of have to be crazy to put yourself in harm's way day after day. Now, part of that is the monetary reward you get for it. But I think it's a lot easier to go out and boycott a company that you really hate for ethical reasons. You know, Monsanto was in the news for years. People boycotted mm-hmm. them, and it's a lot easier to do something on the corporate end, as far as boycotting. It's a lot more difficult if you've gone your entire life supporting a franchise and being right. a fan of a franchise, and you're flying that Ravens flag, and you know they won the Super Bowl. You're so pumped up about it, and then all of a sudden you're just going to turn that off because of this horrific act by Ray Rice. Just doesn't happen, it seems.
It's easy to stop cheering for Ray Rice because that's just one guy, right? But like when the entire league seems to be implicit in this. I mean, when the league isn't cracking down on things like this, and when they're, you know, when you're getting scores of ex-NFL players filing lawsuits because they're, you know, they have dementia at 45. I mean, how, and the league did nothing to warn them about it or to protect their safety. You know, the league is fighting to save the money that they should be paying out to these people. I don't know how you can continue to being a fan of the league when you know these things are happening.
And like the NFL had a model they could have followed. The NBA had Donald Sterling and that whole debacle, and they came down on him like a ton of bricks, and he's kind of the obvious bad guy in this situation, and they squashed it really hard, really quickly, and pretty decisively. And whether or not they have to dial that back, that's fine. The NFL could have done this, but they didn't. And they could have done this to God knows how many situations with players doing the wrong thing. But they didn't, and now they're in their own kind of, they're reaping this ethical whirlwind that they've kind of sowed. But yeah, it's definitely tougher. It's not an owner. It's a fan. It's a guy that people love and they buy the jersey of. But I remember my dad, and this just occurred to me, my dad, when I was a kid, and I grew up a passionate Montreal Canadiens fan, was always like kind of bad-mouthing, in my opinion, the players as people. And just like, oh, I just read this about this guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just mm-hmm. like, why are you doing this? These guys, I'm like, I love these guys. And I think it's either that he was really jaded just as an adult, or he was trying to like teach me a lesson. I'm going to give him the credit and say that he was very subtly trying to teach me a lesson that I just didn't pick up on until right now.
Yeah. But for every dad like that, there's also a dad saying like, look at that guy who just, you know, got knocked out and is coming back into the game. What a man he is.
Yeah,
right?
That's, and that's, how you, terrible that's how you
thing. It all man. Comes down to parenting, I think. Just be a good parent. Use discretion. It's hard not to be cynical, though, when stuff like this happens and takes place. When we come back, Tim Lywicki, on his way out the door at MLSE, some interesting comments. Man, the guy likes to be in the news, doesn't he? And assume it'll be somewhere else, probably back in California. Get to those comments. Also, some new rule changes in the NHL. I'm Ben Annis, along with Jamie Doyle, Arden Zwelling. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis, along with Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle of Sportsnet Magazine. Tim Lywicki of MLSE fame for the time being, although I haven't checked the internet. Maybe he's no longer. I mean, there's going to be a day very soon, I think, we all wake up to the news that they've actually found a replacement. Oh, well, I mean, the last moment that could happen would be in June, but he's already announced that he will be stepping aside. But before he does so, he's going to talk to some Ryerson students and make some comments that will, I don't even know if you can say they landed him in some hot water, but just created some nice talking points for, you know, those of us in talk radio, which is nice. When speaking about I guess it wasn't specifically the Maple Leafs, he says, but he was talking about analytics and how that team specifically is now going to look at them a little bit more. Quote, there are players we have in our organization today whose numbers are off the chart good and whose character is just terrible. I don't care how good your numbers are. If you have bad character, you are doomed for failure. Now, subsequently, Lywicki has come out and said, I wasn't specifically talking about the Maple Leafs because a lot of people put two and two together. This guy's talking about, I don't know, Phil Kessel. This guy is talking about Dion Phaneuf. He said he wasn't talking about a specific player. But it is kind of a curious comment to make, and he had to have known his words would be parsed to the nth degree, and so let's parse them. Yeah. Jamie, what do you make of these comments?
I love this. I love the executive who's got one foot out the door, and he's going to say what he actually thinks. I love that from politicians, too. It's just like, well, I've got, you know, I can't run again. I've got 5 days left. Here's what I actually think. It just makes it a lot more fun, and it's nice to see. There's no spin here. He's just actually talking, and that's always nice to see.
The spin came afterwards, though, because he did kind of back off it a little bit and say, I was kind of just talking about generalities. Well, it doesn't really sound that general. It sounds pretty specific when you're talking about a player who's got great numbers who has bad character.
And it's weird that he knows he's really good at this. He's a good salesman. He knows exactly what he's doing. Was he just kind of caught off guard by the fact that he was talking to Ryerson students and maybe thought this was under the radar? I mean, these are all probably journalism students.
Right.
They're going to be tweeting the crap out of this. And he wasn't even speaking in generalities because he did single out Jermaine Defoe as one of these guys who said, if Jermaine Defoe, who's his boy, who he brought in, who he traveled the world to bring to Toronto FC, he said, if he doesn't want to be here, you get rid of him. Get the hell out of our way, which is about as clear cut as you can make things.
We should clarify as well, not journalism students. They were business students, MBA students at Ryerson University. But yeah, it's the point remains. It's like you can't say anything, especially to a group of
kids.
People, you know, they all have Twitter. They all have phones. Like, this is obviously going to get out. You couldn't have been that stupid. Could he have been? Maybe.
You can't say anything.
Yeah, there's good Vine videos. Me on YouTube.
You just really shouldn't say anything anymore.
What is
about anything ever?
What is the?
he said live on the radio.
What is the legacy of Tim Lywicki going to be? I guess there's a little bit of time for it to play out. Well, a lot of it when you consider whether Brendan Shanahan actually is able to change the fortunes of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I mean, you get comments like this. You got the Toronto FC thing blowing up nicely in his face. Yeah, early returns pretty good on. The Toronto Raptors, they did make the playoffs when they weren't expected to. It's a pretty weak Eastern Conference last year. I wonder if they can sustain that success this year because the East is going to be much better. They didn't do a whole heck of a lot to improve that team. So that's a question mark. Leafs, as I mentioned, a question mark. And now he goes off running his mouth. What are we going to think about Tim Lywicki when he finally leaves town?
The Raptors are the one thing he could kind of hang his hat on because they did so well, but they kind of fluked into it as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, I agree. Listen, I had fun watching that team, but I'd say I'm maybe 70% sure that they can come close to replicating what they did last season. I'm not convinced.
It's a team that was trying to trade Kyle Lowry, who was the player that got them into the playoffs.
Right.
So, I mean, you had a deal in place to get rid of the guy that is solely responsible for your success. So, so you can't really say Tim Lywicki had that much to do with it. You put Masai Ujiri in place, and Masai is clearly a brilliant guy and very smart and well-respected. But he was trying to trade the guy that got him into the playoffs. So I don't know. The Leafs are a burning garbage pile. TFC blew up in his face. They had a very, very nice promotional campaign, and then it all went to hell. Yeah, there's not. I don't think he cares about his legacy. No. Like, I mean, he's got his. What he did in LA was great, and Beckham and all that stuff. I mean, that's what's leading the Wikipedia profile. The Toronto section is going to be somewhere near the bottom and very brief.
You don't think he's embarrassed a little bit? Because, I mean, yes, he did bring David Beckham to the LA Galaxy. They won a couple MLS Cups there as well. There was actual success there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think he got a lot of infrastructure built around Staples Center there, and he accomplished quite a bit in L.A. I mean, I don't think he would be embarrassed about what happened in Toronto because he feels like he was kind of ham-fisted a bit just by the ownership, right? Like, he feels like, hey, if they had let me do what I wanted to do, things would have gone well, but I couldn't get anything done with this ownership.
That is a baloney argument, though, wouldn't you say? I mean, he was able to spend whatever he wanted, at least on the soccer team. I mean, he got Michael Bradley, got two of the biggest names possible in that league, and it still didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, I think here he's probably pretty mad at Jermaine Defoe, who suddenly wants out the door, who is very close to leaving on a transfer deadline day, the European transfer deadline day, not even a full season into this grand TFC journey that he's got. He signed on for a long-term contract. And this, like I said before, this is Tim Leiweke's guy. It's the first kind of huge splash you're making. You're trying to drag this team up by the bootstraps, and the centerpiece of it suddenly, I want to go back home. I can see, like, it'd be legitimately angry. And the thing, the quote, like, he's right. There's always players that are good but are bad also at the same time. It's not that. It's a weird thing for him to say, but it's not at all untrue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we all believe that there are guys who put up big numbers who are bad character guys. And you know what? I think in different sports, I think you can almost be a bad clubhouse guy, be a bad character guy in baseball and get away with it a lot more because that's more of an individual sport. I guess technically on defense, you have to pass the guy the ball. You have to throw the guy the ball. But it's not like hockey where you really do have to work chemistry-wise with guys that are on your same line. Defensive pairings have to work together. I don't know. If a guy's a jerk, he has bad character. If he's not working hard, it's a little more difficult to get away with in a sport like hockey or basketball.
And these guys are all like alpha male, ego-driven guys. That's how they get there. If you're not that guy, you're not on these teams to start with. You got to be able to harness that and to bring it into focus and into a team environment. But yeah, I mean, how bad a character do you have to be the alpha male of the alpha males in the room who won't play with the other guys?
If the Leafs are in full swing in season, like, do you think this is really a big story? Or do you think it just kind of peters out? Do you think it's just because it's like right before the season, there's not a lot going on? So it kind of blew up?
Maybe, but maybe then if the Leafs are in season, you can actually get a quote from somebody on that Leafs team. It might be interesting. Might actually extend the story a little bit more to say, hey, Dion, would you make these comments?
No, he said guys who put up good numbers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's a good point.
Well, I think then he'd have, if the Leafs are in mid-season, he's got everybody parsing through every Leafs player's stats to see, wait, who's he talking about? Who's putting up surprisingly good numbers, and who do I think is a bad guy?
It's a select few that he could be talking about with the Leafs, really.
Yeah, but it is, there's selling the sizzle, not the steak, and then there's, the steak being absolutely rancid. And for a guy who said, I fixed the Raptors, I fixed the Leafs, or no, I fixed the Raptors, I fixed TFC, I'm working on fixing the Leafs. Not a whole lot of real fixing being done there. And yeah, I love this comparison, and it's one that will leave a lasting image in my mind of George W. Bush in front of the Mission Accomplished banner on the aircraft carrier. And that's all I keep thinking about when I keep coming back to Tim Leiweke. And hopefully more stories like this to come before he departs. Yeah. It seems like he's not going to go quietly into the good night, though.
I don't think it's going to be a real, like, soft, quiet exit.
I'm hoping that all kinds of universities are trying to book him as a speaker.
Right. Yeah, maybe he can do a set at Yuck Yucks as well. Lots going on before the National Hockey League season starts as well. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Annis, Arden Zwelling, and Jamie Doyle. There's a couple of rule changes, little tweaks the NHL has made headed into this season, and maybe some that are coming down the pipeline because they're starting in the AHL. We'll start with a couple of the NHL ones first, though. I guess the big one that makes the headlines is the spinorama. It's gone. No more spinning. If you think about, don't even think about spinning. I swear. No, the actual word spinorama is actually in a rule now. You cannot do it. You can't spin in the shootout. So that's bad, I guess. I thought the spinorama was stupid, to be honest with you.
I'd rather get rid of the shootout is what I'd like. I think they missed the target
absolutely.
The NHL comes in with the rule that we're going to end the game with this carnival that has nothing to do with the team game that is hockey. And then they come along a couple years later and say, all right, well, we can't have it be too fun. Like, you guys, you can enjoy yourself, but only up to a certain point. And it seems very hockey to take something that has a bit of personality and it's a little bit of fun, and then just kind of let's strip the personality out of this. So why don't we just, everyone has to shoot from the blue line. Let's make that the rule.
That might actually be cool. You put the four targets up there, like the skills competition. Wouldn't that make more sense?
The same thing as what they're doing now, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or you know what? You have like a race for the puck. You could maybe do it like, remember how the XFL games used to start?
You can do the shootout and you can do a spinorama, but only the goalies. The goalies are shooting on the other goalie.
There you go.
And if you can do a spinorama in your pads, you deserve to win the game.
That actually makes a whole lot of sense. It does seem like the NHL realizes that there has been too much importance put on the shootout. They're trying to get fewer games going to shootouts, right? I think one of the easier solutions is to change the point structure, but it seems like for whatever reason, the NHL doesn't want to go down that path, which makes no sense to me. But what they're going to do this year is a little tweak, and we'll see how much of a difference it makes. And if all of a sudden there's more games ending in overtime, even if it's a slight thing, they'll say we fixed it, even though it could just be an outlier one season. What they're going to do is they're going to have the teams switch ends in overtime. So it's the long change, and they're going to do that dry scrape thing for the whole rink like they do down the middle right now for the shootout. So you're going to have, I guess, better ice conditions and a longer change. I think if they wanted to go even further, you could have made a rule that you can only change on the fly, which would have been interesting as well. But I guess that might help. At least it's a step in the right direction. At least the understanding is we need to kind of downplay the importance of the shootout, but we can't eliminate it entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that it helps, but it's like they're getting really specific into what they're doing. When it does seem like you can just get rid of the shootout. You change the point structure, maybe.
Can you get rid of the shootout, though? Because honestly,
what's wrong with the tie?
Listen, I'm with you. But it's hard to argue. There are, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 times a season where some guy comes up with a crazy, impressive shootout goal. It looks really cool. It's a highlight. To take that away entirely, I think the genie's out of the bottle in the shootout. You can't ever put it away, but any way you can downplay its importance.
The crazier and the cooler and the more highlight just make the NHL want to ban that more a little bit. That's their hair trigger. Looking at me spun around. Yeah. Just making us look like idiots here. Like,
I know you're joking, but yeah, it's I hate the shootout, but I guarantee you there are people, and maybe it's people that kind of peripherally pay attention to hockey, right? And you like to think of the southern states and hockey markets like in Florida, like in Carolina, that enjoy the shootout. I just assume that's the case.
So they're just waiting 65 minutes.
Yeah. Shootout. Yeah. It is true, though. Even down at Air Canada Center, though, if the Leafs go to a shootout, everybody's on their feet. Like, there's no question that there's a little
it's
bit of
exciting. Yeah. But it doesn't make any sense to play 65 minutes of the game one way and then to have it come down to three shots.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make any sense
at all.
You play
65 minutes of hockey and then just end it with a little baseball game.
Yeah.
Cards, war. Yeah. They can play war, et cetera. Okay, so that's a little minor tweak to the overtime rules, the dry scrape and the switching of the ends. How about this rule that will be implemented in the AHL this year? They're going to 7 minutes of overtime, and the first four will be 4-on-4, and it'll be 3-on-3 for the final 3 minutes. So you're going to essentially get, well, you are going to get 3 minutes of 3-on-3, but you are going to essentially get odd man rushes down the ice every single time, aren't you? You're going to get 2-on-1s back and forth. That is a lot of ice to work with when you're talking about 3-on-3. And this is kind of a test. This is what the NHL does. They test it in the AHL. We'll see how it works. And maybe it could be in the NHL next year. Does that make a little more sense than the shootout if this eventually comes to the NHL?
I just want to see how it works. We'll see what happens. It sounds like it might be mayhem, it sounds like it'll be interesting. It's going to be an arcade game, right? Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, why? Let's see what happens. Like, I was the same way before the shootout came in. I was like, all right, let's see how it works, see what it's like. And now it's crap. So you're like, all right, this sucks. But like, we'll see how that goes. And if that sucks, we'll find something else.
I want to ask like an AHL defenseman how he feels about this.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Do you play two forwards, one defenseman?
I don't know. And that's probably what all the AHL
forwards?
Coaches are
you
thinking
need your
right
best,
now.
Your best skaters is out. Is
I
what
see,
you
yeah,
need,
I see
right?
you play so, three
already,
forwards.
Like, these guys
three
are already exhausted skaters. After a full game. Yeah. You can't hold back in the end of the third period because we might go to this kind of 3-on-3 nonsense. It's a weird one. It's a really, and it's going to be fun to watch coaches try and figure this out and players try and figure out how to manipulate this.
My
with all that room, I mean, the little guy is really going to excel.
Oh,
that, yeah. You know what I mean?
Sure, like your little fast guy.
The little Johnny Drouin is going to like tear that up, right? So that's kind of your dude in that situation.
Here's my idea that no one seems to care about. Also, I just thought about what happens if you get a penalty 3-on-3? Do you play 2-on or 3-on-2?
What happens? That's a good question.
I guess you'd have to go to 4-on-3. You have to just add a player to the team.
I guess so.
But here's what I
no
like.
Penalties.
And I've mentioned this a couple of times on the air. And how come nobody's listening to me? I have no idea. It's a good idea. It's a lot like college football overtime, though. You do 5-on-3s. You have, hey, you get a 1 minute 5-on-3. If you don't score, the other team gets a 5-on-3. They score, game's over. If you score, the other team has to score. Do that a couple of times. Then maybe the second time it's only 30 seconds. Wouldn't you get a winner a lot quicker?
That seems like absolute mayhem.
But 5-on-3s are more a part of the game than 3-on-3s, yeah. Right?
Yes, still playing hockey.
That is a situation that could happen organically, yeah.
Right? Okay.
Or we just have ties. Why does someone have to win and lose? Why do we need results?
That seems like...
A tie is a result.
A baseball man to be so pro-tie right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, really?
But I agree with you. Yeah, sometimes that's how life works out. Nobody's especially happy, but nobody's really all that broken up.
Sometimes you push, you know?
Yeah.
The kids, they need it. The MTV generation, they need the results. They need something.
Soccer's had ties for centuries. Nobody's got a problem with that.
Yeah, and it's everybody keeps waiting for soccer to really take off in this continent, and it doesn't really work out, does it?
They say the same thing about hockey in the States.
Well, that's a good point. Another one of the rules that they're instituting, they just keep trying to get rid of diving from the game. So the discipline for diving has been increased, and there's like it's still not hugely problematic, at least from a player's perspective. The amount of dollars they would be fined. First time you dive, you get a warning. Second time it's $2,000. Third time it's $3,000. It maxes out at $5,000 after your fifth time. But after on the fourth diving infraction, these are all post game, right? They're going to look at these videos. Here might be actually an interesting part. Fourth time, the head coach gets fined as well, and his fine goes up from the fourth to the eighth. So the coach can also get fined $5,000 if you're caught diving 8 times. I don't like diving. I don't like it in soccer either. In soccer, there are points where like there's strategic. You kind of have to do it. Not dive, but like if you're clipped and it really does knock you off, you kind of, if you're in the box, I mean, it's part of the game. You just have to go down. It's different than hockey, I suppose.
Yeah.
But is this a step in the right direction? Is it interesting?
It's interesting, definitely. I mean, you see the coach just go up to the guy who he knows is going to dive. It's like, it's my daughter's birthday. All right, just don't screw me on this one.
There are guys, though, that are going to get in the doghouse with their coach, right?
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, I don't know, $5,000 isn't, I guess, a ton to a head coach who's making $1 million, yeah. But it's a lot more to him than the player who's making $5 million, although I don't know how many $5 million players are serial divers. It's an interesting one. I think it's a step in the right direction. I think the correct step would be to have you've got the guys in New York looking at every play, and if there's a dive, your little buzzer goes off and it's a penalty in game. Why can't you do that? Instead of these fines.
It's not 1965 anymore. We can talk to each other from different cities in real time. Like that seems more reasonable than we're going to fine the coach for what you did.
Right.
Yeah.
That would make sense to soccer for soccer.
A lot of things would
well.
Make sense for soccer, but they're stuck not in the 1960s. They're stuck in the 1860s in a lot of ways.
It's true. So we'll have to see how many of these new rules actually make sense and make an impact on the game. What does the clock say now? I think we're under 30 days, 29 days at the start of the NHL season. You guys should know. You look at
every day. The puck drop clock. I think we've had to avoid it. It's intimidating, this big red clock telling us when NHL's coming.
Yeah, exciting. Big meetings this week that I was taking part of as well. When we come back, playoff races in Major League Baseball heating up, and it's not just the Blue Jays. The Tigers and Indians continuing a series today, and you can watch that one on Sportsnet 7 o'clock. There's lots to talk about in that regard. Also, check in on the National League, which Blue Jays would be a whole lot closer to that second wild card if they were in the National League, but they're not. Also, Chris Davis, guy who hit 50 home runs in the show. I like him personally, but he's going to miss the next 25 games, and that likely means that his season is done. Even if the Orioles make playoffs, well, I mean, they will make playoffs. They're going to win the division title, but those suspensions now carry over into the playoffs, where Melky Cabrera's didn't, even though he didn't play in the playoffs. But we'll talk about his suspension for amphetamine use and Major League Baseball playoffs coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live with Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle. I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, along with Jamie Doyle and Arden Zwelling. I am Ben Ennis, taking you through until 12 o'clock, and then I got you for about a half hour to get you set for Blue Jays baseball here on many of these Sportsnet Radio Network stations. We will indulge Jamie for a second here with a little Premier League talk, because I know he's chomping at the bit.
I appreciate it.
Needs to talk a little Premier League. So Arsenal drew with Manchester City earlier today. Lots going on right now on Sportsnet. We've got plenty of Premier League action going on right now. But what have you made through the early parts of this Premier League season? It's been an interesting one. I mean, I've enjoyed that that Manchester United has stunk. That's been fun, right?
That is fun. It's nice to, if you're not a Manchester United fan, it's always nice to see the Giants fall and just try to get back up and then fall down again horribly. Yeah. Most of the things are playing out more or less as you'd expect. Arsenal is underachieving, which they do. Manchester City's not as dominant as I thought they were going to be. They lost to Stoke at home. They don't lose at home. That's their thing. Last year they lost once. I think it was like two games the year before. And Stoke is just Stoke. They're just a team that's kind of always there. Chelsea is as advertised. They spent a lot of money. They seem to have spent it very wisely. And despite an early scare against Swansea, it looks like they're going to win today to just increase their lead at the top. Swansea's a weird one. This was the game, I think, for Swansea where they show whether they've just had an early, easy run into the season and they get three wins on the trot. Manchester United is now an easy win, by the way. And facing Chelsea was the test. Are they actually this good? Do they belong near the top of the table? And right now it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that is the case at all. So has your opinion changed at all since the season has actually started? I mean, Chelsea were preseason, a lot of people's preseason picks to win the league again, or not again, but to win the league after a bit of a disappointing run last year under Jose Mourinho. They look like they were advertised. Are you surprised? Is Manchester City the big surprise to you?
Yeah, I mean, in as much as it's a big surprise, it's still really early days. They can still step it up. But, I mean, losing at home, I think, is the big one. If they just don't do that, and then having that puts them behind the eight ball, because they do tend to drop points on the road, and it's going to come down so close again, probably like it did last year. Chelsea, yeah, very much as advertised. I think I wasn't surprised they weren't great last year. Mourinho's still kind of building the team that he wants, and the pieces he brought in, Fabregas especially, just kind of completes the picture for Chelsea. He's gotten rid of the players he doesn't want, and he seems very much a guy. He's got to have everything exactly how he wants it. And now that Chelsea's on a roll, I don't see who's going to stop them.
It'll be interesting to find out. They are currently playing Swansea on Sportsnet, leading 3-1. Diego Costa doing all of the damage. He has a hat-trick for Chelsea's that game now into the 80th minute. All right, you can rejoin the conversation, Arden, because we're going to talk baseball.
Where am I?
Yeah,
who are you people?
Let's talk about the rest of Major League Baseball outside of the Blue Jays, and maybe talk about the Blue Jays peripherally. But it's an interesting scenario in the American League Central, specifically Kansas City now tied with the Detroit Tigers for a top spot in that division. The Tigers coming away with a big win over Cleveland yesterday. So Cleveland now 4.5 games back of the division title and 4 games back of that second wild card, tied with the Blue Jays. Oakland has really stunk out the joint recently as well. It's funny how the two biggest movers and shakers at the non-waiver trade deadline, Oakland and Detroit, have been pretty lousy since then. Detroit's fallen out of first, so is Oakland. Oakland has no shot at winning that division now because the Angels are on fuego. The A's have lost 3 straight. They are clinging just a half game back of that first wild card for the second wild card spot. If you're the Blue Jays, like, who should you be chasing here? Like, who's the legitimate target? Is it the Oakland A's? Is there an argument to be made that that is the more attainable goal, is beating the Oakland A's?
I mean, everyone's kind of chasing the Oakland A's right now. They're the way that they're falling out. I mean, it's good news for the Jays in that it looked like for a lot of the season that like one of the Angels or Oakland were going to get one of the wild card spots. And now that's not the case anymore. That scenario is off the table. Now both wild card spots are legitimately in play. The thing is, there's like 5 teams going for them. Like Cleveland's still around. The Yankees are still around. Seattle's still there. KC/Detroit, whoever doesn't win the Central, is going to be right there. It's a big logjam. It's a lot of teams are going to be playing each other down the stretch. So, I mean, it's going to be tough to make up ground.
And a lot of people, when they're looking at that American League Central and that wild card picture, forget that Kansas City also trails a game by 2 runs in the bottom of the 10th inning against the Cleveland Indians that will have to be made up. So that's almost a guaranteed loss. So really, you can almost guarantee, you can look at them as now a half game back of Detroit for that division lead and being the wild card team for sure. So yeah, it's an interesting scenario when you look at it that way, where that's the loss. I mean, unless they come back from 2 runs down on the bottom of the 10th.
We might be looking at a situation where we've got like tiebreakers on tiebreakers.
That's,
you know?
That's everybody's dream, right? Like, yeah. I'm the captain of Team Entropy. I don't know how you are, Jamie, but I love this part of the Major League Baseball season. But like, I can go back. How many great one-game playoffs have we seen, you know, down the stretch? There was it the Padres and Rockies that played that one game playoff where Matt Holliday slid in with the chin thing, the raspberry he had on his chin. There was the Twins played, what was that, the Tigers that one year?
Game 163.
Yeah. There's been so many great one game playoffs. We can have like 7 teams playing like that, because there are scenarios for huge tiebreaker, like round robin things, single eliminations to get to the single eliminations. Yeah. That's the dream, isn't it?
That's perfect. And when we talk about how weird it is to end a hockey game with a shootout, you end a 162-game baseball season with one game like that. It's fantastic. It's actual. I mean, you get into the dog days, and there's just no drama and very little interest in baseball, in individual games. And if you boil it all down to one game, that's awesome. I love that.
I'm a big fan of the one-game playoff. That being said, you know, I like the length of the baseball season. I don't think it's too long. I think 162 games you play every day, that's what makes baseball cool, is that the regular season matters so much. And even though you play 162 games, each game matters. But I think the addition of the second wild card has actually made it all that more important to win your division. I think that's been one of the better aspects of it. I'm a big fan of the 2 wild card spots in both leagues. You guys with me on that?
Yes. I mean, baseball, I don't know. It's a thing that you want around for spring and summer. And it's more than just baseball. This is a thing that we have. It's a nice thing. Every day there's a baseball game. It's very nice. Every day there's several baseball games. You can go down and it's a pastime more than anything. It's kind of a staple. It's an institution. It's nice to have around. And then you kind of remember around this time of year that, oh, hey, that all those things like meant something. Like all those games that the Jays lost in August, like that meant something now. But yeah, no, I'm with you. Let's do tiebreakers on tiebreakers. Let's have a 4-way tie for the wild card and just see what happens.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle. I'm Ben Ennis. National League, it's Pittsburgh and San Fran holding down those 2 wild card spots. Milwaukee, game and a half back. Atlanta, 3 games back. You guys surprised at how anything's broken down in the National League? I'm kind of surprised at how, I knew Washington would be good, but I'm kind of surprised at how poorly the Braves have played, now just 3 games over 500. And yes, if the Blue Jays were in the National League, they'd be a whole lot closer, because Milwaukee's also just 6 games over 500 at 77 and 71. They're just a game and a half back of that second wild card spot. But are you surprised at all at how things have broken in the National League, how the Dodgers have kind of run away with things out West? I guess I'm not really surprised in that regard. The Central, how that's kind of fallen apart for the Brewers. I think they were surprised to be there in first place as long as they were earlier in the season. Any surprise takeaways from the National League?
Milwaukee had kind of a similar year to what the Jays had when you look at them being in first place for as long as they were, and then it kind of catching up to them and going through some struggles and getting surpassed. I mean, I think we all kind of expected the Cardinals to be there at the end. Like, it was going to work out for the St. Louis Cardinals because they're the St. Louis Cardinals, and that's what they do. Things just work out well for them. They're a very well-constructed team, and they play very good, you know, baseball. And so we all expected them to be there, and there they are now. And now Milwaukee is kind of fighting to get into the wild card picture with, you know, a scrappy Pittsburgh Pirates team with the Giants there who have, you know, quietly been just hanging around in the playoff picture all year.
It's going to be a fun end of September here as we go forward. Maybe not as fun, although it's been a fun season on the whole for the Baltimore Orioles, but they will be without Chris Davis, who was having a pretty lousy season before he was popped for that 25-game suspension. He says it was Adderall. It's a PED suspension. Amphetamines is what Major League Baseball is calling it. And it's different. You know, like if this is Munenori Kawasaki. Well, first of all, that would have been a shock if it was Munenori Kawasaki. But it's different because this is a guy who hit 50 home runs, right? Like, now it's like, okay, we got it. That 50 home run season was kind of out of nowhere, and here you are having a pretty brutal year. Although, I guess if he was on amphetamines then, he's on them now. But either way, this is kind of the shoe fitting for Chris Davis. Although it's, you know, amphetamines, I don't know how that can really help you hit 50 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously improves your focus and improves your concentration. I mean, it's not going to teach you how to hit 53 home runs like he did. And, you know, he's got 26 this year, hitting below the Mendoza line, which is never a good thing. But, I don't know. I don't think Adderall should be banned. Screw it. Take it. I don't think any of these drugs should be banned.
I wonder about that as well.
Take them all.
I mean, there's a certain aspect of not wanting to force, you know, if HGH isn't banned and you're just allowed to take it, you're kind of forcing everyone to take it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're a miracle man if you're able to compete against mutants in Major League Baseball and you're clean. I guess the reason is we don't know the health effects. Is that it? I'm kind of with you. I think one day we're going to have controlled injections of HGH for these guys. Certainly the game is a little more fun, and you can look at the offense being completely different in Major League Baseball now to the halcyon days of guys with syringes sticking out of their biceps.
Especially things like amphetamines, you know, like greenies, which were a part of the game forever, which, you know, all the, like, guys in the Hall of Fame, like, ate these things, like Lucky
Charms.
They're
not shy to talk about it either. I mean, they don't feel embarrassed about it. It was part of the game. You had the leaded and the unleaded coffee before the game.
Right. Yeah, I got no problem with guys taking stimulants. Why take your stimulants? Who cares? Go ahead. What? How does that affect me? I'm going to get a moral high horse because a guy's taking too many amphetamines. How? Well,
and it's what is there a real discernible difference between greenies? And listen, I don't know. I've never done an amphetamine. Okay, I want that out there. I'm not going to pose the question to you guys either. Okay, so don't worry about that. But I wonder if there is a huge difference between taking amphetamines, taking your greenies, having the leaded coffee as opposed to the unleaded coffee, or being Brett Laurie and pounding 76 Red Bulls on game day. And already, I mean, before Red Bull, there was guys drinking tons of coffee. Like, that's you being jittery because you were so hopped up on coffee. This is a game where, yes, no, it's not the same as football, where it's as demanding physically every second of the game, or like hockey or soccer, where you're constantly running. But it's a game you play every day, and it's hard to be up and ready to play and be in that mindset every single day. I kind of understand how guys need a little pick-me-up. Now, again, I don't know amphetamines, Red Bull, but it seems pretty similar when you're comparing the two.
It does seem very easy to sit back as a baseball fan when you can just, if you're bored with things, or if it's you can't get up for the game, you just don't go. Or you turn the TV off or whatever, but if it's your job, you got to do
really
this.
Can't really do that if you're Chris
Davis,
right?
No, you can't quite do that, no. And also, I mean, with Davis, you're not talking about should this be allowed, shouldn't it be allowed. It is allowed, and it was allowed for him in a very specific way. He got authorized or whatever he got. He was allowed to use it last year, I think it was, the Adderall, and then not this year. So he's just being a bit of an idiot. I mean, they know he's specifically not allowed, like him personally didn't get the exemption, still went ahead with it. And from what I understand, to get the ban, you have to be caught twice. Like there's the one-off, maybe like they give you the benefit of the doubt, you get a warning on the first one, and then you do it again, you've made your own bed, really.
It's pretty unbelievable as well that the Baltimore Orioles get dealt another blow. They've suffered through injuries. Like, yeah, you really couldn't believe. Like, Matt Wieters has not been a part of this team. Manny Machado. Now Chris Davis goes down. Ubaldo Jimenez has been an absolute train wreck. And here they are, not just really competing for a playoff spot, running away with the American League East. They're now 11.5 games up on the Blue Jays for first in the American League East. It is the biggest division lead in all of baseball. Their magic number is down to 5. It's a team that on paper, Arden, you would point to, and even the pitching staff, which has been much better, I guess, than the Blue Jays. But on the whole, it's very comparable to this Blue Jays team. And you can't complain about Blue Jays about injuries if you're the Toronto Blue Jays and say, yeah, well, we lost Edwin Encarnacion and Adam Lind for a good portion of August, and Brett Laurie's been out. Look at the Baltimore Orioles, how they've gotten it done. Guys like Caleb Joseph have come in and done the job for them.
Steve Pierce.
Right. And the Blue Jays wanted him, but he didn't want to come to Toronto, yeah, by all accounts.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, absolutely, you know, if the Jays lost, like, the kind of the pieces that the Orioles have lost, like, you just know they would just explode upon themselves and just collapse like a black hole, right? So, I mean, the Orioles have done it.
Yeah, and even before Chris Davis is now lost for 25 games, he was having a very subpar year. I mean, are they the Orioles don't get a lot of credit for what they've done, but going into the playoffs here with a couple weeks left, I mean, and now you take Chris Davis out of the equation, are they a team really built for the playoffs? Like, should we be talking about them in terms of being one of the best teams in all of Major League Baseball?
Get into the playoffs, anything can happen, right? I mean, you just get into the dance, and then who knows who you're going home with. You know what I mean? Like, just get there. That's what it is in baseball, because it's such a short playoffs. It's such a short series. You get in there.
Yeah, if I were to pick a World Series winner, though, they wouldn't be up there for me, just because they don't have that dominant starting pitcher. Not to say that the Angels do either. I mean, Jared Weaver isn't Jared Weaver anymore now that they lost Garrett Richards for the entire season. I think you need that guy, especially going into the playoffs. It's one thing to be built for 162 regular season games, which I think the Orioles maybe were built a little bit more for, because they have 5 starters that will keep you in games, and especially the way that offense is constructed. I think you're more apt to win a World Series with a team like the Oakland A's, despite the fact that they've really struggled recently, because they have a John Lester and because they can scrape together runs, as opposed to a team like the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Chris Tillman goes off. Maybe Wei-Yin Chen just, you know, has 3 good starts in a row. I mean, crazier things have happened than like a guy just getting hot at the right time, right? If you get hot in October, like, crazy things can happen.
Yeah, certainly there's plenty of time for more crazy, crazy things to happen. As mentioned on Sportsnet today, 7 o'clock after the Blue Jays game, more baseball and lots of playoff implications in Detroit as the Indians head on the road, continuing their series against the Tigers, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario. That'll do it for us on Sportsnet Magazine Live. I've got an edition of Sportsnet today as we get you set for the Blue Jays continuing their series against the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm Ben Ennis for Arden Zwelling and Jamie Doyle. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.